usually at the end of the center's trainings, there's a lot of energy from folks around how would I integrate doing, you know, maybe mediation work for the first time in their career into their existing career, or I'm already working as a mediator, but how do I integrate doing it in this particular way, the understanding-based model into my work? And just a lot of questions in general about bringing the understanding-based model to whatever it is that you do to make money.
The Center for Understanding and Conflict welcomes you to The Other Chair, a monthly podcast exploring the dynamics of conflict and how to bring the human issues to the table. Together with our guests, we explore how the power of understanding each other can lead to better solutions for people on both sides of an issue. We will also share tips for managing your own mediation practice, approaching conflict in the professional world, and ways to apply our understanding-based model in your personal life. Hello to our listeners, and welcome to The Other Chair. My name is James Dykman. Today's episode is a recording from a webinar we held last year called Top Tips for Starting an ADR Practice. Center trainers Melanie Rowan and Catherine Connor will share an introduction to creating your own practice focused on conflict resolution, including mediation and collaborative practice. This webinar is being shared because we've received a lot of questions from people who've taken our trainings about how they can build their own practice, either in the work that they're already doing or strike out on their own and start a new career. And we wanted to make this recording available to help them in their efforts, and we welcome anyone listening to reach out for more information on how we can help you be successful as a conflict resolution professional.
Okay. All right. So why don't we get started? Melanie.
All right. We will get started. I am so excited that we are here doing this webinar today, which we have titled Top Tips for Starting Your ADR Practice. And we're doing this webinar in part out of recognition that usually at the end of the center's trainings, there's a lot of energy from folks around how would I integrate doing, you know, maybe mediation work for the first time in their career into their existing career, or I'm already working as a mediator, but how do I integrate doing it in this particular way, the understanding-based model into my work? And just a lot of questions in general about bringing the understanding-based model to whatever it is that you do to make money. And I work as a career counselor in my sort of full-time day job at Berkeley Law. So I work with law students on career stuff. And I'll let Catherine say what she wants to say about why this is a topic that she loves. But I love talking about how people can better align what they do to make money with their values. So that's what brings me here. Catherine, I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
I'll say something else. Melanie, you didn't even say your name. So that's Melanie Rowan.
Oh, I'm Melanie Rowan. I'm so sorry.
And Melanie is one of the teachers for the center. And I'm Catherine Connor. I'm also one of the teachers. And I like working with people to develop their practices because I'm so excited about using the model. I've been using it for decades. And I think it's such a valuable service that we can offer to our clients, to our community, to the world. And so I want people to be able to do that successfully. And I think there's some things that people don't know about yet that we'll be talking about, or things to look at for yourself to try and make it a reality. So, and I love seeing that happen. So that's what we're gonna be talking about today.
Yeah, and you know, we only have this amount of time, so we won't be able to get super in depth on all of the various things that might come into making this work for you, but we're excited to at least get sort of through a survey of some considerations. So what we've done is, you know, as the title indicates, we've organized this into some tips, and then we organized our tips into sort of four general buckets kind of type of tip. And so I'll just sort of take us through what those buckets are going to be, and then we'll go ahead and get into the material. So first, we have a few tips that are around self-reflection on yourself and on the process of integrating this model or this type of work into your current practice. Self-reflection is obviously at the core of what the understanding-based model is about and what we at the Center for Understanding and Conflict do. So that's our first bucket. Our second one is figuring out what you already have and then also therefore what you need and how you might acquire that. The third bucket is making a more detailed plan and thinking about how you're going to track what you're doing. And then the fourth bucket is getting the word out to people about your work, which is, of course, essential to bringing in folks to work with as clients or otherwise. So those are our buckets. Catherine, anything you want to add to that?
No, and why don't I start with, in a sense, it's a self-reflection bucket, but it's also kind of the reflection on the process. So I'm going to share my screen because when we started talking about this, we thought, well, maybe it'd be good to have some kind of graphic to show about what the process might look like. And you all know who've been coming to center programs or going to these webinars, or maybe you're new to it and you'll find this out, which is we like V's. So we have our outer V, which is what happens when people are in conflict. So they have their positions. They want to go across and have their positions become solutions, but we know we want to go underneath and go through the process of figuring out how we're going to work together, what the problem is that needs to be addressed, gathering information, finding out what's important to people and for them to recognize that for each other, brainstorming options, comparing that to what's important and coming up to solutions. So that's our outer V. We're familiar with that. Then we have our internal V, what's happening inside of us as we're working with people. So we have something's happened on the outside, then we pay attention to our body and breath, our judgments, the feelings that come up might be anger or pain. Then as we're looking at that, we start to become more open to others, empathy, open to what might be going on for them, their story. And out of that, we have a connection that then comes, has an outer expression. So then we thought we should develop a practice development fee, just as a little bit of fun. So Melanie and I did this as we're preparing for this webinar. So we have at the top, what's our problem? We have an ADR practice that's not where we want it to be. And at the end, we want to have a thriving ADR practice. So the steps would be first, which is what we're going to talk about with self-reflection. You know, how am I going to work with myself on this? What is the agreement I'm going to reach with myself about how to get this done? Second, information gathering. So what do I need to know about my current situation or future, including some influences from the outside might be what's happening in the market in your community and other outside influences. Then going down the why trail. So looking at why is it important to me to change from wherever my practice is now to get to the point of the actual core meaning. That's really where you might have the motivation and the energy and the stamina to work on this when everything else might get in your way. Then framing interests, like we always do, make a list of the things that are really important, brainstorm your options for how to get there, and then create your detailed plan, including some kind of accountability for yourself so you actually get it done. Then go back to your list of interests. Did I take into that all to account? Then carry out your plan and you'll be to the thriving ADR practice. So that's where we hope to get to at the end. And we'll be talking about some of those steps along the way today.
I just want to highlight this whole process could hold both for the situation where you have an ADR practice, but it's not where you want it to be, or the situation where you're looking to get rolling on an ADR practice and that's a new thing for you. Okay, so moving to more on the self-reflection, the starting to kind of get underneath what this is about for you. We wanted to come up with a couple of just questions that you could work with yourself that would drive, could work for driving self-reflection around why you want to do this work. We understand that motivations for doing things are important for parties in mediation, and they are important for you in pursuing professional work, because it turns out when we get down the road to creating the detailed plan that there could be some barriers or sort of swamps that emerge in that process for you. And if you're connected really closely with your motivation for doing that, that is what is going to help you keep powering through the parts where it gets challenging. And it will probably be challenging at different points. So the questions that we came up with for this context that might be helpful to you for thinking about what it is that you want to do and thinking more specifically than just, ooh, I really want to be working more this way. But like, what work in this way is what you want to be doing? And then also why you want to be doing that. We decided to get a little concrete with it and sort of consider some imaginary scenarios. So one thing you could ask yourself is, take yourself to a situation where you receive an inquiry from a potential client and you immediately hear from this client and you're like, yes, I would love to do this. I am so excited about taking on this client's work. What did they ask you to do? What are the qualities of the work that this person needs from you? What is it like to do that work? What type of inquiry was it? Is it going to require you to interact with people? Is it going to be more head work, more conceptual? Is it going to be more heart work, connecting emotionally? What does it look like for you to picture someone coming to you and asking for something and you just being so thrilled to jump in and get started on doing that work? So that's one way of trying to bring to life your vision for what the specific work is that you want to be doing. Then thinking about that, another way to think about that is, and this is very real for me, at least, I experience this all the time professionally. You're out here reading articles, you read or you hear about somebody else's work, or somebody describes what they're doing, and you're like, man, I wish I was doing that. Why am I not doing that right now? I experience this constantly. That might be a me problem, but if you ever have that experience, what is it that the person is doing, and what is it really about what they're doing that speaks to you? What are the qualities of the work? And what are the characteristics of it? And I would just encourage you not to spend so much time necessarily dwelling on what the subject matter is. I think a lot of us think that what is the topic of the work might be the answer to what we want to do. But my experience doing a lot of professional development counseling for people is that it usually has something more to do with what it feels like to do the work and not necessarily so much conceptually what the topic of the work is. So for example, maybe you're drawn to employment related work, you want to get into the workplace. It's probably not the ins and outs of what employment stuff is about. Technically, it's not the subject of employment, but it might be the feelings that come up for people in the workplace and why work is so critical to people's identities that might be drawing you in. So I just encourage you to engage with it on that level if you can. If this is hard, and I'm going to say this probably in all of my tips, a buddy conversation will help here. You could definitely find somebody else who's thinking about this. There are 33 attendees at this program, and we would love to match you all up with each other for buddy conversations. Or you could contact somebody from, you know, any part of your life or another training you've done to start working these questions. Okay, back to Catherine.
So one of the things that after you figure out why you want to do this and what's really drawing to this work is what's keeping you from it. So what's getting in your way? What is blocking you from moving forward, you know, full speed ahead? And so it might be something that's just going on in your life right now. You know, I'm too busy because I'm already committed. I'm overcommitted to, you know, 3 committees I'm on and my client workload is too high. Also, I can't fit another thing in my life. It could be the thought of, you know, that you're working somewhere where you're getting paid by someone else, but you think you need to go out on your own, and the thought of doing that is too daunting. It feels like it's too overwhelming, or maybe it's a financial. If you went out on your own, you need some kind of financial backing as you're ramping up. So there could be both internal reasons and external reasons. So if you think about those, we're starting with the internal reasons. So are there things about my personality that are going to get in my way? So am I someone who is a bit of a procrastinator? And so I always think, well, I'll get to it next week when I get these other things done. Or is it that you get started on something and you're very enthusiastic and then your enthusiasm wanes? So you have to figure out some way to rekindle that enthusiasm. So there could be other internal. So it's helpful to sit down. You might want to even do this where you take out a piece of paper and you write down at the top, these are the things that might get in my way, or these are things I know are going to get in my way, or these are the roadblocks. And you start about me, and then you just start writing. It's often automatic writing is what we call it, which is you're asking yourself a question, but you're not thinking about it, you know, like, oh, I must think about it before I even write. You just let your hand flow. And sometimes something comes up a little bit out of your unconscious that if you were trying too hard to think about it might not arise. So you could just try that as a way of trying to surface something that might not be as clear to you. And then you could also do something similar, may not be need the same kind of process, but maybe a list of what are all the external things that could get in my way. So it might be something as simple as, you know, I need to find the right office space that I think will have the right environment for having an ADR practice that conveys the kind of warmth that I want, the kind of welcome I want for people. And that's hard to find right now. So it could be something like that. It could be there's already so many people in my community that are doing this kind of work that it's a tough market. So I'm going to have to figure out how to really distinguish myself in the market. So come up with that list of things that will be in my way. You know, you could think about it as, you know, sort of traditional, what are my strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. So you could approach that way. But for me, I guess I like to just do it in kind of simple language, which is, you know, what are the things I'm going to put as roadblocks myself? What are the other things that I need to figure out, roadblocks I'm going to need to figure out? That are going to come from other people.
Conflict manifests itself in many ways in our personal lives, for professionals in the workplace and for practitioners who have made a career bringing together parties in conflict through mediation practice. Each month, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts live webinars with featured guests discussing best practices and sharing their experiences for tackling conflict using the understanding-based model.
So we separated these into two tips. What Catherine was just saying about the roadblocks that you can anticipate, and you know, sir, I love the suggestion of doing free writing with it to just let it. Those are the things that sort of pop up. The related next tip is doing a thorough assessment of your personal strengths and challenges related to starting, running, or updating your practice. In a more sort of 360 degree way. So not just the roadblocks that immediately kind of pop up as you think about this, but overall, like, what do I have going for me? Where are my growing edges? And that's the phrase that I will use for this, because definitely what we're trying to make sure people come away from this understanding is that whatever challenges you have about building and running a practice, and like, for example, some of the things, Kat, I am a procrastinator, for example, and the idea of running my own business is quite stressful to me because I have a lifelong experience of myself as someone who is in danger of dropping the ball all the time. I am having a different experience of myself in the last 10 years of my life because I learned some ways to work with myself to fix that. And that is a much longer conversation that we could have. And this is the first point where I will plug our upcoming program called Your Next Steps, which is a three-part, much more in-depth thing where we're gonna work with the cohort to go through this whole process. In that kind of space, you can start to think about like adaptive things for working with your strengths and challenges. Here, we're just saying, let's start with taking a thorough look at those strengths and challenges. Some of the areas where you might look are around organization. That's an area where I have a lot of challenges. Connecting with other people. Is that something that you find stressful if it has a vibe of networking to it? Are you maybe strong on it when it has a vibe of research to it? What can we do to reframe it into a research vibe? But so connecting with other people, asking for support. If that's something that's hard for you, that's another one to identify. Do you have strengths in asking for support? Do you have already a well put together network of folks who support each other? That's a strength that you want to kind of tally for yourself, if so. Time management, if that's a challenge, be aware of that. Start thinking about how you're going to work with it. Likewise, sticking with a project over the long term. I would add emotional resilience. In what ways do you already bring a lot of emotional resilience to the table? In what ways does that feel like something that you'd like to continue to develop? In this space, again, conversations with other people, I think, are super helpful because the people who know you well can reflect back things about your strengths that you might not have thought of, or you might not think of strengths. They're just sort of givens, but they are strengths and you should be aware of them and taking that into account. or they could help you understand what you might have as a challenge. If thinking about doing that stresses you out because feedback stresses you out, that's a challenge. Make note of it. And let's figure out a way to get around it. And there are ways to do that. There's lots of resources out there too. But I think finding someone to work with you on taking feedback is a great helpful thing here if that's not something you've already done in your professional life. I'm going to leave it there for now, I think. But again, we will be having much more space for this in the Your Next Steps program.
I want to add to that, that as you're looking at those, your strengths and your learning edges, that education and, you know, whether it's self-education or going out and getting training or doing a workshop is a critical part of how to address, you know, getting ready to go ahead. So it might be that you feel like you need more education on, you know, on ADR itself, on how to be a mediator, how to go do a conflict professional. But there's a lot of other things you might also need to get some education or training on. So it might be if you're starting up a practice and you haven't done that before, there might be a whole, you know, business side of a practice that you need to educate yourself on. It could be if you're not someone that likes to give public, you know, do public speaking, but you feel like that's a way to reach people in your community, then you figure out, how can I get better educated or learn how to be a better public speaker? I actually, with a group of people, when we were trying to start up collaborative practice, we had Toastmasters come in, and you can actually have, we didn't know about this, we found out you can have Toastmasters do essentially a class for a group of people. So we got about 8 or 10 people together, and over, I think it was 6 or 8 weeks, we went through this whole Toastmasters program where we had, each time we had to get up and give a speech and do spontaneous speaking. And by the end of it, we all felt so much better. We felt better prepared. I'm sure we were giving better speeches, but also doing it in a group meant we, there was a certain amount of camaraderie, and so it really helped. So there may be things that you could do either by yourself, online, in a book, in a class, or, you know, in a group, where you can fill in those gaps, and other people may have the same gaps. So coming together and doing that can be really fun and energizing. It was very energizing to do that. And then we went out and started talking to groups. And that kind of segues into what I'm going to talk about next, which is looking at your support and your support system and your referral network. So first, for your support system, you know, you may, that's kind of, I don't know, cliche to talk about support systems, but when you're doing something like this, it's really helpful to have some group of people. Maybe it's only one person, but often can be good to have several that are going to be there to cheer you up, to ask the difficult questions, as Melanie said before, to kind of maybe see things you don't see, see your blind spots, to be your accountability partners that will check in with you and find out if you're doing what you needed to be doing. So think about, what do I need? Who are the people I need to be in my support network? So it might be one of the people you need is just someone that's going to just be your cheerleader. Oh, you're so great at this, you know, and not do anything other than to just like bolster you up. It could be that what you need is someone who's going to be kind of your organizer for you, to help you stay organized if that's something that you need help with. It could be if, like me, I hate going out to, you know, like social events of people you don't know, not social, but, you know, networking events, you know, the bar association. Oh my gosh, I just like hate doing that. So if I had someone to go with that I can walk around and then introduce myself to people I don't know, oh, so much easier, so much easier. So maybe you have someone in your support network who's your, you know, schmoozer buddy because they're so good at it, and then you could just tag along and learn from them and be with them. So, and it might be that you need some business buddies, someone who's more experienced in running a business that can just help you get set up with the right software, or ask you the right questions, or give you advice about computers, or whatever you need on the business side. So figure out, who are the people you need to surround yourself with your support network. The other thing you can do is look at a look at your network that you already have existing as possible referrals. So when Melanie and I did the Next Steps program last year, we thought, we asked people to do their own network map. So we thought, oh, well, if we're going to ask them to do it, maybe we should come up with our own so we see what we're doing and we can give an example. So I'm just going to share real quick my network map. So a lot of my referrals come from other lawyers in my county, family lawyers and others, and then surrounding counties, people that know me through the center, former clients, family friends. So what's interesting is when I first started sitting down to do this map, I'm like, oh, well, there's probably not going to be that many circles. And then I just kept adding more people and realizing that I have a lot of different threads and circles of people that I can go to. And if I'm just starting out my practice, I want to know what all those circles are in my life where I can spread the word. So doing a network map like this can be very helpful. And I just saw in the chat, there's a question, what is a Toastmaster? A Toastmaster is an organization. I know it's in the United States. I think it might actually be worldwide, which the total focus is on public speaking and helping people learn how to be public speakers. And so they have Toastmaster clubs where people meet once a week and just give speeches. And then they have, you know, they have conventions and they have competitions for people to speak. So that's what a Toastmaster is. Melanie, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yes. I love the network map that Catherine just showed. I'm a huge proponent of the network map. And just to underscore something that Catherine did say, but your network map definitely is not probably just the people that you think of as your professional network. There's a lot more there, especially in your personal life and in your past that you might have forgotten about because it's not what you're dealing with day to day. So just really, if you sit down to make one of those, which I highly recommend, I would just think expansively about it. And you know a lot more people than you do. And also people are probably more happy to talk to you than you might feel. That goes back to identifying your comfort level with reaching out to people. And we'll talk more about that coming up. Okay, so Catherine just spoke about taking stock of, because we're kind of still in the bucket here, of figuring out what you have and thereby what you need. Catherine was just speaking about people, who's in your existing support system and referral network. The other big bucket here is what concrete things do you already have? And then again, that might tell you what concrete things you already need. And the list of concrete things is pretty vast for me because I'm not somebody who necessarily like thinks this way all the time. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't immediately come to my mind when I think about it. We actually created for the Your Next Steps program a whole document that like lists a lot of this stuff out so that people don't have to brainstorm it for themselves. But just some of the things that are on that list that are going to be things that you're going to assess whether you have them already or whether that's something you would need include space. And that includes decisions about, you know, in-person space. Is it virtual space? There might still be needs around that, potentially internet service, et cetera, hybrid. Things about the space. There are concrete things that you might need in the space or about the space. There's also the concrete universe of protocols, procedures, and forms that might be things that you might need to develop or you might need to get from somebody else. A very first level example would be if you're just starting a practice, you may need some sort of engagement agreement depending on how you're structuring your practice or what your practice is. That might be something you could get from another practitioner in the same field, or it might be something that you would need to talk to somebody about drafting or that you might have the skills to draft yourself. Everybody is in different places professionally around that. But there is more where that comes from: intake, client intake, protocols, and procedures. So that could include also other people. Is there administrative support that you need? And does that involve training somebody or finding out how to hire somebody and so forth? There's also the realm of what tools you might need in your practice. So that could include software, it could include hardware. We have a very fun piece of the Your Next Steps program where we talk about some tech tools. That is in part because Catherine and I both just really like talking about tech tools, but that is a, and if you love that category too, be careful that you don't spend all your planning time on it, because that could happen to me, for example. Tech tools and then physical equipment that you have or need, which could include like an easel or a whiteboard, all kinds of things related to video conferencing beyond just the computer, like camera, mic, et cetera, a scanner, something like that, and any services that you might want to employ, such as, you know, phone answering or email answering assistant type services. Those could be people, but there are also services for that, and so forth. I think those are sort of the big concrete needs that we sort of have identified that folks need to work through. There is also the realm of thinking through the financial piece, but I think I'm going to leave that where it is because that might be part of what Catherine's going to talk about next. Not sure.
Okay. I want to actually give one tip about, particularly about space and what you might want to have for your space, which is take yourself on an imaginary walk up to your entrance of your workspace. So what is it like if you're having a physical workspace where people are going to come? What is it like for them, you know, when they drive into your driveway and they walk up? How do they feel? Is it clear where your office is? Is there a good directory, or do they need directions about that? When they walk in the door, who's going to greet them? What does that space look like? So you can actually just visually take yourself on that imaginary walk.
Throughout the year, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts in-depth, basic, and advanced certificate programs designed to train you to become effective mediators and conflict resolution professionals centered in the understanding-based model. Our training programs have been the gold standard in alternative dispute resolution for 40 years and is popular within the legal community with human resource professionals, ombudsmen, and corporate workplace mediation clients.
If you have an existing space, you might want to physically do that. So you actually, with a very fresh eye, you know, you drive in and you're like, okay, I'm a client. What's my experience as I walk in the door? And just try and look at it with very fresh eyes. You know, when I look around, is it, you know, does it seem welcoming? Is it feel chaotic? Does it feel calming? What kind of colors are there? Is the furniture comfortable? Is it the furniture so comfortable it's hard to get up and out of it? Go sit down yourself on your, if there's a waiting room, sit on the chairs there. What's it like for someone? Are they going to be too close together? If it's two people coming in for mediation, is there enough space for them to not feel like not to get any closer than they want to be? And then when they're going to get up to walk into your individual office, if there's two different places, what's that experience going to be like to them? Who are they going to see? What's it going to be like? At my office, kind of outside is a little bit nondescript, you know, but you walk in, there's a lobby area. But then when you walk out of that in towards my individual office, we have this lovely courtyard with a picnic table and some trees and some nice bushes. And I can almost feel people a little bit relax when they see that, because it just feels like they're slightly nature. I mean, it's not really nature, but it just you can feel that relaxing mode. And then we walk into my office. I have a large sliding glass door and windows on one side that looks out on a tree. And then people often come in and it's like, oh, okay. So can you, even if you don't have that nice view out the window, is there something you can create in your office that will make people feel comfortable and like they're in a safe place? What do you have on your walls? So just kind of imagine that.
I also, Catherine, listening to you talk about that, you're talking a lot about walking, which makes sense, you know, when we're talking about if clients are coming in. Mm-hmm. And that also makes me want to highlight the accessibility piece of this when you think about your space and what assumptions are we having about what clients are coming in with or what accessibility needs they might have. Mm-hmm. And I'll put this on the concrete list because I think the other thing that is important in this connection is doing your best to make your space as accessible to as many different clients as you can. And then recognizing you may have a limitation. You know, I, for example, was renting an office for a period of time that was in a building that was an old building and had no way to have an elevator. And the office was on the second floor. And that was the situation. And so then you think through concretely, and this is what I did, communicate to clients or potential clients that, you know, your default office had this accessibility challenge, but if needed, you would be able to arrange a different place to meet, or, you know, in this day and age, also potentially online. But the point is thinking through concretely the accessibility stuff. I will also say, if that overwhelms you, if like me, for example, logistics are a challenge for you, that might connect to a feeling of overwhelm. And then we're back in thinking about strengths and challenges about doing this. That is okay. Enroll a buddy and or the vast resources of the internet in thinking through this set of issues. And the important thing is to just keep working through it and get your set of concrete needs together and how you're going to answer the questions that you have that answer for yourself in order to be able to move forward. Also, I did not mean to do this, but we're currently thinking about developing an accessibility related webinar over the next year, because we feel like that accessibility topic is super important and something that we imagine a lot of folks would be interested in. So watch this space. Mm-hmm. I promise I'm not just here as a commercial for our other programs.
I think that accessibility is really important. I learned about it firsthand when I broke a foot, one leg and an ankle and the other leg in a fall. And so I was in a wheelchair for about 4 weeks and discovered that there was just a small lip, but maybe inch or less, getting into the kitchen conference area in my office that I could not navigate well in a wheelchair, because I wasn't that experienced. I couldn't get over it. And it was very frustrating, and it gave me a real eye into the small things we need to look at for accessibility, and also things like, hearing and visual. So I think it's really important to be considering that as part of our overall plan. So what I'm going to talk about next is that the next tip is make a detailed plan and including a method about how you're going to track what's in that plan, what you've done, and what still needs to be done. And by detailed plan, I mean, we're probably talking about a multi-page document. Now, for some people are like, oh, I can't do that. That's going to be way too overwhelming. Okay, if you can't do that, then maybe your plan is got different topics, and you'll have a detail for one topic at a time. But to be able to chunk it down into little steps so it's not so overwhelming that you feel like you don't even know where to start. So you could start with, for example, we're just talking about office space. So put down into that category all the steps that you need to take as small as you can in terms of chunks, because then you can plan which ones you can do and in what order, but also you can have a sense of accomplishment. I mean, I'm that kind of person, I like to have to-do lists and I love crossing them off or checking them off. So for me, having many steps is actually very satisfying because then I can get them done. For some people, that's not so important, but at least have enough detail so that you have actions that you're gonna do to carry out to move yourself forward. So that plan would include, obviously we've been talking about this space where you're going to work what you need for that. It can include the financial aspects with Melanie just alluded to, which is what are the resources that you already have? So it might be that you already have some money set aside, or maybe you're going to need to get some money through a loan or some other way, or that you'll need to start saving. So what are the resources you have now, and what are the resources you're gonna need, and what's your plan for getting those? And then really helpful to have a budget. That may be hard in the beginning when you're not even sure, for example, what you're gonna pay for office space or how much some furniture is gonna cost, but start working on that. So what are all the things you're gonna need to buy or pay for, such as staff or ongoing software? So that you have at least a preliminary budget, know what you're working towards. And then you'll also want to have a essentially a marketing plan. So who are all the people that you're going to want to reach out to, organizations you're going to join, speeches you're going to give, articles you're going to write, whatever it is you're going to do for marketing. Sometimes it's helpful to brainstorm what all the possibilities are, and we'll talk about that in a minute in terms of getting the word out. But again, put that all down in a plan so that you have all the steps and you can see them. Sometimes I think it's helpful when you're trying to create something like this to maybe work on an easel pad or some, you know, a whiteboard, something where you can start putting all of these up and be able to see them all at once. If you're, you know, if you're just on an 8.5 by 11 page or just a spreadsheet or something, it may be harder to look at it. But if you were on a larger piece of paper, then you can put all the categories and all the steps in them up and look at them once. One thing you could do, which could be helpful, is use Post-its. So, you know, you can have bigger size Post-its. They don't need to be all the small ones. So put all the steps on Post-its, put them on a whiteboard, and then you can start moving them around. Because once you know all the things that you are going to want to accomplish, then you can start putting them in some kind of chronological order. So it might be, what am I going to do in the next week? What needs to be done in the next 2 weeks, the next month, 3 months? And so you create that chronological plan, and it'll probably have tasks from different categories. So once you have that all in place, then how are you going to, what's the most useful way for you to work off of that plan? So some people use different kinds of tech tools, like Melanie mentioned, we love tech tools. So there's different, task-oriented apps. I use Trello myself. I love Trello, but there's other ones. You may have a way of tracking tasks yourself that works really well, but if not, see if there's one that you can learn that will help you to follow what you've done and what still needs to be done and the pacing and timing of that. And then the other thing to include in your plan is accountability. So how are you going to be accountable to yourself to actually carry this out? And what kind of help do you need for that accountability? So it could be that you're quite self-directed and, you know, if you had your plan, and when you're going to do it, you're just going to be able to do that. It could be that you need someone else to work with you on it. Maybe having a staff person is what actually will help you to carry this out, because you're going to be able to delegate tasks to them. And then you're more in the role of just managing it all. It could be that you have some kind of significant other or sibling, somebody that could be there to either help you carry out some of the tasks or to just be checking with you. So have as part of your actual plan, how am I going to be accountable? I think that's a critical piece. So I think that's it. I'm going to turn it back to you, Melanie.
Okay. And so in terms of our progress through today's content, that was a whole bucket that Catherine just did. That was the making a detailed plan and having a tracking method. That is important enough that it gets its own bucket. And that is definitely a piece that we are happy to work with people on at the Your Next Steps program, or that hopefully you can connect with other folks through trainings or others that you can work with on that. Our last bucket of tips is about getting the word out. And the first thing is, this is one of my favorite things to work on with people, refining your message, which I sort of am exhausted from a lifetime of hearing the phrase elevator pitch. And it's a useful phrase because the idea is, when we're trying to tell people about what we do, we want to make sure that we know we can do it and get it out in a fairly short period of time in order to allow the conversation to keep flowing. And also that the process of getting yourself to a point where you can describe what it is that you do to that short of a bit is an incredibly important and useful discernment process. So there's value to getting your elevator pitch in order, just process-wise, and then also when you meet somebody at, you know, Thanksgiving, I don't know why I picked Thanksgiving. That's not a good example. When you meet somebody anywhere, you know you're not going to have that much time to explain what you do. So have it ready. So my recommendation would be to work to get yourself to a point where you can describe your work in a minute or less. That's about 4 sentences. You could progress through trying to write it up if that's how you think. You could progress by having a conversation with another person until you get it down to that level of time. And what you want is to think about, what do I want somebody to understand about me by the time I finish talking in this very brief period of time? Let's call it a minute. I think that a lot of people find this stressful, but in the end, kind of fun to do. That's been my experience when I've workshopped with people through it, which is why I love doing it. I'm not sure how much more I need to emphasize the need for it, but it's super important. Catherine, over to you, possibly.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think the process of trying to get it down to just a few sentences actually helps to crystallize it more for yourself. If you did that self-reflection that we talked about in the beginning, you hopefully will have really gotten to the core of what's important to you while you're doing that. And that then can become the springboard for your elevator speech, for your short way of describing what you're doing. And if it ties into that core meaning that you found when you did the self-reflection, then when you talk about it, it's not going to come out as some sales pitch or as a quote elevator speech. It's actually going to come out with the passion and the enthusiasm you have for this work. So I think those two actually really relate to each other, and doing the step of the self-reflection at the beginning so you really have clarity for yourself makes doing that refinement of a message much better and much easier.
This podcast is supported by our CUC Connect members, whose yearly membership includes free attendance to our live monthly webinars, 12 additional featured recordings of past training events, discounts to our basic and advanced training programs, and support from our network of certified trainers for continued professional development. Consider joining CUC Connect today and dive deeper into the understanding-based model.
And then it's besides the people you happen to meet on an elevator or on airplane or at a business function, where are the other places where you can put that message? So, on your website, look at your website. Does it actually reflect who you want to be in the future, or is it 2 years old and it reflects, the old you, but you actually need to, and now revise it to have this new message that you've created. A 3 or 4 sentence message is perfect for the front page of a website. And then start to look at what all the other pages are. I personally have to say guilty of my website is probably my law firm website is probably 8 years old, hasn't been looked at. I think back then I was still doing similar work, so I think it's not as bad as it might have been before I got started in this process, but I think it's something that we kind of think, oh, one and done, but go back and redo that website to reflect your new message. The other thing is, how do you get it out to all these people? So first of all, you have hopefully your network map that you created that we talked about earlier. And so then it's telling everyone about what you're doing and why you're doing it. So I thought it might be helpful to hear a little bit about what happened when I transitioned to having more of the ADR practice. So when I started practicing eons ago, which was almost 40 years ago, I started my own practice with someone else out of law school. So we didn't really know what we were doing, but we started having pretty simple cases. And I decided I really liked family law. So I started doing just that. I got my mediation training pretty early on in the first few years, but then my practice was mixed primarily representation, a little bit of mediation, but not that much for 15, 16, 17 years. And then I decided I really wanted to have much more of an ADR practice. So I started taking more trainings, more advanced trainings, And then I started going around, and anytime I talked to anyone, no matter who it was, I said, and they would ask, what are you doing? Or, you know, how's life going? I said, well, let me tell you about it. And I would go into my, you know, explanation about how excited I was that I was doing mediation, and this is why, and what it was about. And a lot of people were very supportive, like, oh, I didn't know you'd do that. Oh, I'm going to think of you. And so it actually started spreading the word to people that, you know, I didn't even know. So at this point, I even get probably 25 or 30% of the referrals that come into my door, which I track. Every single person that comes in, track where they heard about me. I don't know, it's someone they said, so-and-so referred you. I don't even know who so-and-so is. You know, it's like, I'm supposed to know them, but I have no idea who they are. So I think that we think that if we're talking to one person, that's going to be our referral source, but actually that person may talk to someone else who may talk to someone else. So think of it as you've got your map that I showed you, but that off of those map, off that map with all those circles on it, all those people have, you know, threads that come out and they have their own map. So you have a very wide potential group of people that you can talk to and spread the word. And so I did that. I went around, I told everybody, and so then I started getting in mediation clients, and then, you know, I hopefully did a good job because then they started referring people. So that's the part about where continuous training, refining your skills, having high quality services is a critical part, because you could do everything else right. You could have your office set up beautifully. You could have all your business plan in place. You could have all the funding. You could talk to everybody you know. You could have an amazing website. And if you're not providing high quality services, it's all for naught. So continuing to do your education, do your skills. I mean, like, I have enough MCLE units for my next three lifetimes. So always, you know, looking at doing your own self-reflection about how is this going? What do I need to do differently? You know, study groups, working with buddies, as Melanie said, but working with other people to keep learning. I've been in the same study group for 21 years of people that we just keep learning together. So I think that's a very critical part of building up a practice, is the services you're providing. So I'm going to turn to you, Melanie.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one other piece I would add to that, and this is something that I've seen happening in my life. And I think, I mean, this is a little more community organizing-y type of point that's connected to this, is the other thing that is an opportunity with telling everybody you know, is I think a lot of us, when we start looking at running a business that includes mediation as a piece of it, this may be more or less true in the different professions where mediation might come up, but I think a lot of us encounter, where is the money coming from that would come to me from doing this work? What systems are providing resources that are even available to compensate people for doing mediation work? And where does that seem like a dead end street? Because I think that as you start to explore ways of doing this work, the question comes up, well, who can pay me to do this? Mm-hmm. And, or if the clients can't pay me because I'm not interested in serving clients who can pay, who would pay? How can I be compensated? Once you start thinking about that, for me, once I started thinking about that, I realized that we have so much cultural work to do around telling people that mediation, this form of conflict resolution, is a thing, and that it is a good thing, and that there are people who have the skills to do it, and that people can build the skills to do it. And so for me, when I'm out meeting new people and talking about what is the work that I'm doing right now, I find that almost every conversation immediately goes to, that's so great because it's so upsetting what's happening in our world today around conflict. And I don't think it's a new problem, but I do think we're all suffering from a culture where fear of conflict drives all of these other results, including a really messed up criminal justice system and a bunch of other things. That if we all skilled up around conflict, we would be in such a better place. And I like to have that conversation with people so that the word gets out there, so that someday somebody would pay all of us to be mediators all the time. And because I believe in it, And I also want to talk about what is the specific work that I'm doing in connection with this. And that's my space for my elevator pitch, but it can be such a meaningful conversation with people. Mm-hmm. So that is my a little community organizing piece. And thank you, Karen, in the chat. Okay, we are at 12:54, which is almost the end. I'm not sure if we should just like open up for Q&A or what is...
Yeah, I think any Q&A, and, but while people are thinking about any questions they have and they can put them in the Q&A, I'm just going to go back to the practice development V and just recap what we talked about today in our tips. So our first tip was looking at our process. So what is it that's going to be involved and what are the things we need to be doing? The next tip we gave you was figure out what you want and why. So going down that right trail, finding out what's really important to you, what's the core meaning of having this kind of practice. And then also looking at what gets in your way. This is part of your information gathering. What are my going to be my blocks? And then also looking at, also part of information gathering, what are my personal strengths and my learning edges? What are the resources I have already? What are the things that I'm going to need to build my practice? Both concrete needs, software, a table, chairs, but also staffing, financial. So what are all the things that I need? And then also looking at, and again, information gathering, what's my current support system and what's my current network, mapping my network. And then we looked at what's important. We created that list from going down the why trail about what we want and why, and then brainstorming what all our options are. What are all the things that we need to be doing in order to carry this out? What are the possibilities? And then creating our detailed plan with all the various steps, creating a chronology or pacing for how we're going to do those, and creating some plan for how we're going to be accountable either to ourselves or someone that's going to help us be accountable. And then get the word out to everybody and what we're doing and carrying out the plan. So at the end, we'll hopefully have a thriving ADR practice. So that's a recap of what we talked about today. So I just want to thank everyone for coming today and hanging in there. And we wish you the best with building up your ADR practice.
Thanks, everyone. It was so great to see everybody here.
Thank you to Melanie Rowan and Catherine Connor for sharing this webinar recording. The full video is available for free on our website, and if you would like assistance creating a plan for yourself while diving deeper into the concepts shared today, consider joining us for our next Your Next Steps training series, beginning May 12, 2023. Thank you to today's guest for being with us today, and to our CUC Connect members, whose support enables the Center for Understanding and Conflict to bring new perspectives in the field of conflict resolution and mediation to you, our listener, in each new episode. You can find out more about today's episode, along with full interviews and additional information about conflict resolution and mediation using the understanding-based model at www.understandinginconflict.org.